remember that before 2006, cooperatives were taxed like any other large business, which means they were complying with the 30% taxation that was applied for large businesses. And in the 2006 budget, the proposal was made that the tax compensation for cooperatives follow that of small businesses. Any patronage refund. Secondly, then we said that when the prudential requirements have been met, then the cooperative bank will be taxed like other cooperatives, and other cooperatives are taxed under the SME tax regime, which means that any taxable income ranging from 0 to 43,000 will be tax exempt. From 43,000 to 300,000, the tax imposed will be 10%. Therefore, here we just align cooperative banks with how other cooperatives are taxed. And also, any distributions. Now, let's say that the prudential requirements have been met. Now the cooperative bank is taxable. If it does decide that it will redistribute the patronage refund back to the members, this will be taxed in the hands of the members. So if it goes to you as a member and your marginal tax rate is 40%, this is how it will be taxed. Also, we propose that the refund that is, the reserve fund that is stipulated under Section 20D in our bill, it is related to the provisions in the Cooperative Act. What we want to say here is that 5%, not all of it should be kept by the cooperative bank itself. A portion of it should go to the agency and set as a prudential requirement, just like the commercial banks are required to keep a portion of their liquid assets with the reserve bank. So this is the proposal that we will be submitting to tax policy and the South African Revenue Service.
I would imagine that this applies to all the other people that raised the issue of the tax situation.
We propose, Mr. Chair, that we would not deal with this matter again as the submission applies, and if the members ask, we'll then go back into the paper and just clarify. I'll ask you to take the following question.
The next question relates to how we deal with the greater build-up versus rapid update. And I think the agency will endeavor to achieve both to ensure that there's a progressive realization or support for cooperative banks as well as a rapid update where it's necessary. And the primary purpose of the agency would be to provide support to those institutions to ensure sustainability and viability.
We move now to the comment by Nehau and Kosatu. The first point they make there is that it is not clear in the bill what the relationship between the cooperative banks and the general cooperative sector is. We think here that they mean, if you look at who can become a member of the primary cooperative bank, we only say that there must be natural persons. And that's supposed to cross-reference it to the Cooperative Act. Now, the problem here is that if you only allow natural members to be members of the Cooperative Bank, what about the clients of the Cooperative Bank who are like stock sales or who are other cooperatives like agricultural cooperatives and so on? We agree with them, and we think that it was an oversight on our part. So we will now suggest that we change the definition of the primary cooperative bank to allow other cooperatives. So that is then, we believe that this solves their concern, or this helps their concern. The same is true for the second point. Now, in the third point, Constantine just says in the preamble of the bill, why do we need to specify that we will promote the advancement of cooperative banks under sustainable market conditions, and they are proposing that we remove the word market in that sentence. We are happy with that. Can I ask your end to take question four?
The concern was that the term executive officer just creates some confusion, and the most position was put forward that executive officers should be elected rather than appointed. And we are proposing an amendment to that section, to the definition, as well as in the substance of the legislation, we are referring to executive officers to make it clear that executive officers are employees of the bank. So they, it would be inappropriate for them to be elected by the members. They must be appointed and report directly to the managing director. Executive officers are clearly your second level of management in the bank, and it is important that they are also subjected to the same requirements in terms of fit and proper and the other stringent requirements that pertain to senior management in the bank.
Thank you, Chair. The concern here was that Stockfell Saving Group and smaller village banks who does not meet the criteria as stipulated in our bill will not be able to be supported by the agency. What we would like to propose here is that it is not our intention that the Stockfells and the little saving group should register according to this bill. However, if they so wish, they are welcome to approach the agency. Therefore, the agency will not only support the cooperative banks that are eligible to register. They will support cooperative banks as well as other financial services cooperatives to ensure that if there's any progressive build up or deficit at stake, it happens within the realm of the agency. The agency will be keeping an eye on them. And therefore, we hereby recommend that Section 55 be amended to effect the above.
Thank you. In point number 16, because I was just requesting that we must add in there that the cooperative should set up an internally democratic way to operate. Our response to that is that this bill is cross-referenced to the Cooperatives Act, which does exactly what they are suggesting. So we don't require that. We don't think that there's anything that's required of us to do here. Can I ask Oko to take a question?
We're going to find ourselves dealing with one question, and you know there might be other clarifications. Can you just note it, and then we'll deal with the primary question. Maybe what we could do, I mean, seeing that this does not require, maybe what we could do is to break halfway and deal with the question so that we do not actually them at the end. Yeah. But I'll be guided by this mission. If the mission fails at some point, that no, maybe let's stop and deal with all the ones that we've gone through and then proceed to the other submissions. Because fortunately, we've dealt with first submissions of both sides, Chancellor, which we do, and now we're dealing with consulting. And perhaps we take, say, three of them. And then we yeah, okay. Okay, can you just note that one? And we'll proceed to five and finish the consulting one, and then perhaps we can go back.
It should provide for the conversion of a primary into a secondary and a tertiary. And it appears to us that the concept of a secondary and a tertiary cooperative has actually been misunderstood under this comment. Because a secondary and a tertiary cooperative, they do not necessarily convert. They are actually formed by two or more primary organizations. And so it is that issue of understanding the concept of the secondary and tertiary. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then in paragraph 8 under COSATU, they are suggesting that a representative body does not have to be a cooperative.
We agree with that, and we are proposing that we amend that in the bill. In the same point, we would like to suggest that we also say that now that the representative body does not in itself have their cooperative, we are saying currently in the bill that they must be registered as such. So because we're saying that they need not be a cooperative, we're also suggesting that we remove the requirement for registration. AD of their comment says they also should not be an application fee. If this fee is there, it should be low. Our policy intention with this provision is that this fee is linked to the administrative cost of the processing of the application. So it is difficult to say whether it will be low or not low, but an attempt will be made to try and keep it as low as possible. 8C is a question that says, but what is the benefit and support that the representative body would be entitled to? We're proposing here that, Honorable Chair, the members of the cooperative bank are not very sophisticated people, and they need to be protected from people who are not legitimate and who may be posing as legitimate representative organizations. So in that point, we say there's no benefit to registering as a representative body for the representative body itself, but there is a benefit in protecting the members of the cooperative body from people who may just be illegitimate people just seeking to abuse the cooperative bank members. I'm going to ask Ola to take the question 9.
Thank you. So question 9, they raise the same concern that they raise with representative bodies, but in this case it's with support organizations. Similar to our response above, we say that there will be a small fee and this fee will be linked to the administrative cost that the agency would incur in terms of processing the applications of accreditation for support organizations. Under C, what benefit will support organizations be entitled to? Honorable members, you have to remember that the agency will be a wholesale organization, so it will not be providing services directly to the cooperative bank. So it will use the services of accredited support organizations to fulfill its functions, and therefore this will be the benefit of the an accredited support organization. This means if the training to be done, the agency can then use you to deliver the training.
Thanks. I'll ask
John
to take 10 and 11.
The first comment relates back to some of the comments raised under Luther as well and will also be raised under Stockwell. It's just the whole context of trying to enhance the whole cooperative sector through the cooperative bank role. And our view is that is not the purpose of the legislation. There is a cooperative act that has very specific responsibilities in supporting the cooperative sector as a whole, but the cooperative bank still pertains to cooperative banks as such, and the agency is specifically obliged to look after the cooperative banking sector to promote and facilitate the growth of that sector. So we don't think we should be putting a specific obligation on the agency in terms of cooperatives in general. We could exceed basically the focus and the objects of this piece of legislation. The next comment relates to the appointment of the board. So the comment was made that the board should have representatives from cooperative banks or cooperative organizations appointed to it. The legislation provides that the minister appoints the board members based on nominations that are received through a public call for comments process, and we feel that that's public process for making nominations is sufficiently transparent to provide that adequate representation is on the board.
Thanks. Point number 12 is just a text one, and we've dealt with it. And point number 13 relates to the payroll deduction, and as you would remember, Honorable Chair, this was also one of the issues that was discussed in great detail during the public hearing. Our response here is that we know that there is a lot of interest groups who are lobbying to have payroll deduction from government as well. And Chairperson, this is quite a long and it has been a long process coming that far. And the position that we have taken, since we've taken the position that says that we want to take away payroll deduction, still remains. And because we just think, Chairperson, that once we start opening up, then we have to explain why certain interest groups are entitled to payroll deductions while others are not. It just becomes a fiscal process to manage. In any event, we do think that the entire scope of this legislation seeks to promote responsible lending practices by the cooperative banks. And the very fact that we are putting taxpayer money through the agents to train people on how to do responsible lending is in itself justifiable, not to allow for payroll deduction, because we think that that on its own should be helping the cooperative banks to be able to do responsible lending and to collect from that point on. So, Chairperson, I think that's it, and,
But nothing should be,
I don't know,
I wanted to ask you. You wanted to ask a question and Comrade Mark, I have requested the committee clerk to put this issue from the members before you are. You are welcome to the member, and you can take a very comfortable seat in the box. Okay. Let's proceed to the circle one. But as I indicated, members, that maybe I'll be. Advise the committee where we would want perhaps to stop and deal with the ones that we have handled, because you know some of the responses are actually cross-cutting. It was like the first one on circle. I see if you are referring to paragraph 4 of the COSATU one. I don't know how many of those would have a similar thing. So if I had my way, I would have just said let's proceed with the whole responses and then go back and deal with them one at a time. And put it there.
Okay. Thanks.
In the circle comments relates to the definition of the executive officer, and again the question of should the executive officer or the managing director be appointed or elected. And as we stated during the briefing session, what it attempted to do was to align the cooperative bank bill with the Cooperative Act, because the Cooperative Act is basically the building block for cooperatives. You must first be a cooperative before you proceed to becoming a cooperative bank. And we've aligned the wording. In terms of the Cooperative Act, the word appointed is used as opposed to elected. So we remain true to that appointment. And I do think if we look at the requirements of the Cooperative Act and instead of what is in the Constitution, it does indicate that all directors, including the managing director, is appointed by the members of the cooperative.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Question 2, question 3, question 4, and question 5 are all interrelated. And basically they say, if you put the minimum requirement for registration to be 200 or 1 million, what becomes of those cooperatives or software that are below? Ola explained this earlier, Chairperson, and we do say there as a provision, but all we're saying here, just to add to what Ola said, it's not the intention of this bill to register every stock cell or every small savings club or every family gathering that seeks to promote its own savings. It's only when it becomes systemic that they must register as a bank. However, if they do have intentions of being qualifying with the minimum criteria at some stage, we do allow for the agents to assist them in meeting the minimum requirements. What we don't want to do, we're not proposing to do, Honorable Chair, is to reduce the minimum requirements. We think that the minimum requirements should stay as they are, and whoever seeks to achieve those can go to the agents for assistance. So, Honorable Chair, I'm just saying that in this response, we're covering 3, 4, and 5. In point number 6, and this relates to a number of other comments, we are just saying that the audit committee, if you look at the functions of the audit committee and the functions of the supervisory committee, at face value they look the same. And our response to that is that it is true that in the, as we define the supervisory committee, we did not thoroughly explain what the purpose or the functions of the supervisory committee is. But our policy intention here is that the supervisory committee, once you have the board elected by the members, who ensures in the board that the board does fulfill the requirements as per the constitution, as per the cooperative act, and as per the cooperative bank bill. We are proposing, therefore, that this supervisory committee must perform that function. However, we are also proposing that we must change the name supervisory in the supervisory committee, because it may give an impression that you're talking about the supervisory committee in relation to the supervision of prudential regulations. So we are proposing that that name must change from supervisory committee to governance committee. Now, governance committee, we think, is much more descriptive in explaining what the functions of this are. But we do think that the audit committee must change. There are a lot of other comments that say that we must do away with the audit committee. We respectfully disagree with that position. We think that is an important function, and the audit committee must stay, but we must replace the supervisory committee with governance, with a governance committee, and then explain that further. Can I ask Ola to take number seven?
Thank you, Chair. The concern here was that actually there was a bit of a misunderstanding in how they recorded their comment, where they say that the registration cost of each certificate will be too costly, but in our bill, we are not saying that the certificate will be registered, we are just saying that it should be issued. We, however, do note their concern, and we also say that deposit books can serve this purpose as well. So members of a cooperative can use a deposit book as a proof of ownership of shares in the cooperative.
In respect of the comments around the participation of cooperatives, all three of the cooperatives in the MPS, we accept, we've already mentioned to the committee that we accept the proposal put forward by the South African Reserve Bank to actually open up the national payment system to primary, secondary and tertiary. In the bill that was tabled, the proposal was that there would be a progressive realization and that primaries could not fully participate. But we do accept the South African Reserve Bank's input in that regard and will propose an amendment to the committee. I think it's also just important to note that the entry requirements that set in respect of the National Payment System Act will ensure that when a primary wishes to participate, that there are certain requirements that they will have to meet to ensure the integrity of the payment.
The next comment, Honourable Chair, just suggests that we must provide in the bill how the shares of the cooperative bank are to be treated. Usually, in banking legislation, the treatment of the shares is prescribed in the regulation, but we are happy to share with the committee members what the thinking is in this regard. The main proposal is to say that when a cooperative issues shares, you've got to have a regulatory means by which you protect the withdrawal of shares so that you can protect the stability of the bank. And we propose in the regulations that these shares should not be withdrawable. If they are withdrawable, a certain portion of them should just not be withdrawable, period. In the case of the commercial banks, they are divided into two tiers, tier one and tier two capital. And we provide a similar approach here and say that in the first year of the capital, such shares should not be withdrawn under no circumstances. In tier two, we will say that they will be withdrawable subject to certain conditions, and these conditions will reflect to the state of the health, of the financial health of the cooperative bank at the time. So this is what we'll propose in the regulation. Section 10, Honourable Chairperson, relates to the large exposure. Basically, there are two sections there, A and B. And the comment that we have is that Section A is a little bit misleading because it gives an impression that a cooperative bank is not allowed to lend 10% of its assets to any single person, when it says to any person. So there is some kind of a misunderstanding there. I must say that we after some discussion in this, we are recommending that we do away with A and keep B. It does give the same effect. Can I ask you to take that?
My understanding is that the response that the consultant has gave us in respect of 10 also applies to 11.
Shepherdson, before we move on to 10, just in 10, they also suggest that we must add these large exposures relate to the investment activities of the cooperative bank. They also suggest that in relation to receiving the bank, we must also restrict that. We respectfully disagree with this position because we in the cooperative, any one member has one vote. It doesn't matter how much shareholding he has in the bank. So we don't think that this suggestion protects the cooperative bank in any way. So this suggests that if any one single person comes and invests more than 100% of what the bank already has, that member will not be able to influence that cooperative bank because in decision making he still has one vote or she still has one vote. In section 12, this is again one major policy suggestion that we are happy to remove in our bill. It relates, honourable members will remember that our proposal in the current bill is that we must have a deposit insurance fund which is funded by the government and that there must be schemes that are run by the cooperative banks themselves. We are happy to remove the scheme, and the reason we are happy to remove the reason they were there in the first place is that it's not advisable for us as government to issue a government insurance fund that will crowd out existing insurance schemes that work well. However, after discussions with institutions such as SACO, who advise us that their schemes are not necessarily working too well because they do not have the critical mass and economies of scale which are required in any normal deposit insurance scheme, and therefore that if we are proposing a deposit insurance fund, they would be happy to close down their schemes and contribute to the fund. Now, coming from them, we are happy to remove it because we think that there's no point of caving if this section is not going to be utilized. So we support that. Can I ask Gogo to take the question of the distinction between the representative body and the support organization? Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Here, really, the concern is that what is the distance really between the representative and the support organization as well as the agency? As it has been alluded to before, that a representative body really it serves as a voice for the primary organizations that belong to it, for the primary cooperatives that belong to it. While the support organization has more functions added to that of the representative body, it actually provides training as well to its members. But it should be noted in the same token that the agency is actually not precluded from using other accredited service providers to actually provide services as may be required and training as may be required by other primary cooperatives. So there is a distinction there in that the representative body is just an advocacy body that is there to give a voice. While the support organization has more functions added to that, including training. And the agency will use the accredited support organizations as well as those that are not registered with them that are accredited by other institutions. Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Chair, question 15, question 16, and question 17 are similar. And all that they are saying, SACO has made a very strong point in this regard. And they say that the 20 million rand threshold that distinguishes primary cooperatives, who will be regulated by the agency and those who will be regulated by the reserve bank, is not advisable. And the reason for their proposal is that you do not have to use, you only have to regulate activities of the cooperative bank. Now, we agree with the logic, but we disagree with the fact that says that we can't use the 20 million rand threshold. Here's the reason, honorable members. The entire bill, the whole bill, seeks to regulate the functions and nothing else. So that's why we have a section that deals specifically with prudential regulation. So in prudential regulation, if for instance you are a primary cooperative bank, primary savings cooperative bank, and you don't issue loans, the lending regulations are not going to apply to you because you don't issue loans. If you are a secondary cooperative bank who trade in financial instruments, if you are a primary cooperative bank, you are not going to be regulated as a secondary cooperative bank which trades in financial instruments. Now, that's one element of it. The second element of it is that, say you are a secondary cooperative bank, you have a license to trade, but you choose not to trade. Again, if you choose not to trade, you don't have to comply with the existing regulations. Let me give an example in this instance. African Bank is a commercial bank. They are registered as a commercial bank and they have a bank license. Now, they can take deposits if they so wish because the license allows them to do so. But as their business model, they choose not to take deposits. They choose to fund their operation through their corporate bonds. Now, once they take deposits, so therefore the regulations relating to deposit taking won't apply to them because they don't take deposits. But once they take deposits, then it means that those regulations are applied to them. I just wanted to give this illustration to show that in this instance we're doing exactly that. So if you're a secondary cooperative and you don't take those, you don't do those activities allowed for you in terms of that license, you don't have to comply with that. We think that this answer goes for 16 and 17 and 18. Can I ask Ola to take question 19?
Thank you, Chair. The concern here is that the concern under question 14 is that in our bill we say that for you to be a representative body or a support organization, you only need two or more primary cooperatives belonging to you. We understand the logic behind the concern here. However, we think that this may be too limiting in practice. The suggestion here is that for you to be a rep or a support organization, you must have at least five or more cooperative banks that you represent. Now, the concern here is that in some areas, there may be very few cooperative banks. For example, in the Northern Cape, I don't think there are more than three cooperative banks. In KZN, there are only four remaining cooperative banks. So if we limit it to, if we say five, then this could be too limiting in other areas. And we believe that section 31 and 32, which talks about representative bodies, and 36 and 37, which talks about support organizations, the requirements there are very stringent that it should preclude proliferation and it should also preclude any fly-by-night bodies wanting to take the function. Thanks. Thank you, Chair. In under 19, the recommendation here is that we must compel the supervisor in the agency to negotiate agreements with regulators of in other sectors. Now, what we are saying here, we are saying that yes, this is an ideal situation. However, this is a single regulator agreement which cannot be provided for in this legislation. However, we are comfortable that Section 42, it says that the supervisor in the agency and the supervisor in the reserve bank, they are supposed to work together. There they are compelled. And then under Section 53, we say that the supervisor in the agency is welcome to contact any other regulator as it may be. It says that if there's a competition issue, they are welcome to contact the Competition Commission and any other regulator.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. In point number 20, I just need to explain a little bit of the background in this point. What SACOL is saying here is that we say that the agency is going to be a wholesale organization. Now, if it is going to be a wholesale organization, then we must put it in the law that it must utilize at all points the services of the support organization. Now, here's our practical difficulty, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. At the moment, you only have SACOL which has the skill to implement the functions of the agency. The difficulty with that is that if, for instance, you've got 62 cooperative banks currently as it stands, and about 62 financial services cooperative banks as it currently stands, and probably 28 credit unions, and you only have one representative body that can fulfill those functions, then we just think that it makes things with the agencies work much difficult. Because remember that these capacity building programs will start from the very, very basic. They will start from teaching the members right from literacy levels, financial literacy levels, simple bookkeeping, and way above into complex skills such as credit risk management and so on. So if you've got that number and only have one support organization because you're forced in law to use them, it just makes it may even create a bottleneck problem in the implementation of such functions. So what we are proposing here is that we need not be compelled to use them. As far as possible, we will try and utilize them where it's practically possible, but where they don't have capacity or they're overworked, we should have an option of obtaining the services of private service providers in implementing those areas. In section 21, here the issue again is that if a primary cooperative bank has got financial difficulties and is failing, as they put it, then the development agency must assist that primary cooperative through the secondary. Through the existing secondary cooperative bank. We have one practical problem and second policy or substantive problem. The first practical problem is that we are not making it a requirement in law that all primary cooperative banks must belong to secondary. So then the issue is that where the primary cooperative bank does not belong to secondary cooperative bank, how do we then assist it? It just makes it not possible. Because there will be primary cooperative banks who deal directly with the agency, so we can't put that. But the second one is that even if they were, we don't understand what the word failing means. Our understanding is that if it is failing, you have to look at the circumstances of the failure. And if you determine that the circumstances of the failure are that you have been constantly advising the cooperative bank to, maybe the issue is that they don't go to the training that's provided for them. You will make it available, but they don't go consistently. And they are beginning to fail. The question, the substantive question there is, do you still want to have such a bank? Our view, we take a humble view that says that when such a bank exists and you determine those are the circumstances, you need not go ahead with helping them. You should allow them to fail and just bail out the depositors in that case and just move on. Section 22 relates to the same point I've just referred to, which says that some primary cooperative banks may not belong to secondary cooperatives. I think we've responded to that. Point number 23 is asking the question that was asked by Kosaki, the benefit of registration of representative body and support body. Ola responded to that. In section 55, it's similar to what you said about the support of the secondary cooperatives and so on. And so is point number 25, section 55.1J. Section 26. Okay, this is the board representation. Can I ask Joanne to send it? Okay. We have responded to this in the consulting issue. That's where they want that we put it in the law that 49% of the board must come from their representative body. And basically, we're saying that we don't agree with that. We just think that the nomination process will determine who can go in there. Question number 27 relates to the remuneration of the board. Can I take ask for what to respond to that?
Thank you very much.
it is our view that with regards to remuneration of the board, those functions should actually be left to the constitution of the corporation banks themselves and not be put in the legislation. Thank you.
So anyway, take 29 and 30.
Currently, there's an exemption notice for cooperative banks under, issued under the Banks Act, which exemption notice is exempted from the provisions of the Banks Act and respect to prudential requirements, registration, etc. Once this piece of legislation is enacted and is commences, we will repeal the exemption notice under the Banks Act because the notice was issued under the Banks Act. We can't, in this legislation, retract an administrative action by the Minister of Finance, so we have to get under that act. The next quickly relates to the payroll issue, which we have responded to, and this decision actually goes further to say that any employer that refuses a deduction from payroll should be guilty of a criminal offence. And I think, as we indicated earlier, that the focus is rather on appropriate risk management practices as opposed to easy collection mechanisms, and we do think that it's inappropriate to allow or oblige payroll deductions.
That's the end of the comments under subcourse.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And I also believe that it's the end of those that made oral submissions before the commission, as you responded to all, of course. And the rest are those that had made a recent submission, which you then respond to. Can I then recommend that we pause and deal with the ones where we also took oral submissions, and then you can then walk us through the ones that were a recent submission. Members, Mr. Mguni, yours was actually the first. Yeah, we'll start with Mr. Mguni's one and then we'll come to Mr. Althea, Mr. Johnson. Because he had already asked the question.
I agree with you, Chair.
Yeah.
I'm a part of the movie and comfort with the oil. Oh, I said that's a friend. I think that you need to be just like just for China.
You just go back here.
I'm thinking, I think I would do the issue just like just.
Why don't we do the bill close by close? Oh, okay. Okay, Mr. Althea, your question.
Yeah, I think when it is related to what Ingozi said, the question I'm having in my mind first is that when looking at our program, that on the 4th of September we'll be dealing with the bill. When the department officials firstly engaged us on, I think, on both and Trump, a crucial issue which I believe that it is more crucial, the issue of figure. And they said to us, yes, this is still in discussions, and it's not clear whether in terms of what they are asking, which is going to be recommended to be part of the deal. I think that in it's also it's a point which I feel that there is an inconsistency within the response with amongst the officials. Because when you go down the number of issues, say, no, we'll repeat, we'll agree, you understand. But when it comes to this one, there's nothing which is clearly saying whether it's going to be on the deal, and I believe that that's a crucial issue.
Let's now go to the question you are raising. You are raising the question relates to the compliance with the Financial Intelligence Center Act.
Yeah.
And the response that you get from National Treasury is that cooperative banks will become accountable institutions in terms of Schedule 1 of the Financial Intelligence Center Act. That one is clear. But then the next question goes on to say that the specifics of compliance are still being discussed with the Financial Intelligence Center.
Yeah.
But issues of compliance, but otherwise, that should schedule one of the Financial Intelligence Center Act. I mean, cover the conflict. Is that the understanding? Do you want to clarify this, Joy?
Thank you, Mr. Chief.
So this point on the Financial Intelligence Center compliance.
Related chair, there are other processes that are also inconsistent with the point raised by Comrade Garcia. For instance, the issue about national payment system, there is an amendment that is to take place. But already we are moving ahead on this bill. I'm looking at the program. The program does not stipulate anything in relation to this amendment. And also another new law that is coming on the deposit insurance. Now, there are relevant areas on this bill that relate to that coming deposit insurance scheme law. But this law, as we are dealing with here, is already ahead of all of those processes. Now, the question for me is how do we balance all of this whilst there are these new laws still coming in, amendments still coming.
Okay, but my understanding also is that on the fourth one, we deal with the same clause by clause. All amendments that relate to the proposed amendments on this one will be before the committee for consideration. Those that relate to this bill, but those that relate to other bills, I mean, then the balancing act now comes into whether this act waits until the others are finalized or whether the others, because I think there is a process in place that deals with such issues. It depends which one affects the other. But the amendments on this one, if the committee is agreed today, when the officials come before us on the 4th, they will come with those amendments and the committee will then consider it. But Joanne, you wanted to clarify that?
If I can just explain in respect of the FIC bill, if you look at, for instance, a normal commercial bank or a financial services provider, the price legislation applies to it, irrespective of the fact that the bank actually is saying you must comply with FICA or you must comply with FINE Act. The regulatory regime applies because of the activity that you perform. And I think the same applies where we say that in terms of Financial Intelligence Center Act, you must be listed as an accountable institution in the schedule for that regulatory regime to apply to you. And that's an administrative action that the Minister of Finance is authorized in terms of the FIT Act to perform. But I think the details that we're referring to, for instance, if you look at the requirements for FICA that the banks require, you need a utility bill, you need your ID document, you need X, Y, and Z. And we were seeing that, because FICA is cooperative, you know your members, because you are, there's a common bond. So the requirement, should we really require utility bill or force cooperative bank to require utility bill, specifically if we look at small villages, you know, it might just not be possible for people to produce a utility bill. So I think it's those type of detailed issues in terms of what are the requirements that we will place on them to know the customers, for instance. So those details, and in those details are prescribed, or the Minister has the authorization under the FIT Act, which you extended to him, to prescribe those details. I think in respect to the amendments to the NPS, National Payment Systems Act, we are proposing a consequential amendment in this bill. So if you look at Schedule 1 to the bill, we are amending the National Payment Systems Act through this piece of legislation, and similarly we are amending the Banks Act and also amending the Cooperative Act to ensure that this legislation actually fits within the broader legislative scheme out there. And all the amendments to the Cooperative Act have been negotiated with the Department of Trade and Industry as the implementers or the administrators of that piece of legislation. And the National Payment Systems Act is also an act administered by South African Reserve Bank on behalf of the Minister of Finance, because it falls within the legislation that he's responsible for administering. So all those issues have been addressed with the implementers of the bill, and we feel comfortable enough in terms of proposing those amendments to you for consideration that there won't be a difficulty arising. So there won't be a separate bill in amending the national payment system coming to the committee if we are amending it through the consequential amendments in Schedule 1.
Mention has made also for the details, but have you got this scheduled before you? Because there are quite a number of them mentioned. But the policy challenge is actually not there yet. We don't even have the policy challenge. This committee was.
Can I just explain on a rule? In the sense of deposit insurance, we are creating a different tier of cooperative banks in this field. So you're going to have on the one column the cooperative or community-based bank, and then on the other you're going to have commercial banks. Now, the concept of deposit insurance makes it difficult to have one deposit insurance that covers the risks of both. So what we're doing here is that because we are proposing that we create the cooperative banks as a concept, built into that cooperative bank will have deposit insurance for themselves. We just need to explain here that when cooperative banks have got their own members and they take deposits from them, and one cooperative bank fails, it's the deposit insurance of that cooperative bank that must help out in the deposit process. It's not fair to expect the deposit insurance of commercial banks to help in the failure of the cooperative bank. So for cooperative banks, you will have deposit insurance for that. And for commercial banks, you will have deposit insurance for that. So what we will do is that we will, as we have been promising on our budget, we will table the deposit insurance bill for commercial banks. And that is going to cater for the failures of the commercial deposit insurance. And this, is by necessity, requires that there must be two separate deposit insurance funds.
Okay. I have... you said you have the follow-up.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I think, with your respect, the Department of National Treasury is coming to propose to us that we are the legislature. We have to legislate. And we have not really issued on and wait for litigation. So you see this particular law is effective.
Which point are you talking to? Can you be specific so that we apply our money?
The inclusion of that is why I'm feeling strong, that to fix the compliance of the cooperative bank in terms of the seeker. We don't legislate for now. We legislate also for the future. So that in the near future, where one cooperative bank may be not compliant, then you have to go back to know in terms of the central source, if we could have also included it within the bill, so you close that loophole. But nonetheless, we as the committee will deal with it. But I want to remind us that we have to legislate so that in the near future we don't find ourselves wanting. Thank you.
Mr. Carter?
The point I was raising about the program that we have on some of these amendments and new laws to come is that we do not have those on our program yet. The question is, at what point are we going to have those entertained? That's just to conclude the earlier point I was making.
The program says deliberations on the cooperative bank bill. That's when we look at the consideration of the bill. That's when we will be looking at the bill with or without amendment on the phone.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is there on the program.
No, it is there on the cooperative bank field.
Yeah.
No, I thought.
Yeah.
I am referring to the deposit insurance scheme amendment. The new law. If you must correct me if I'm on the tangent here.
Honorable Johnson says, okay, that's fine. Then you say the deposit insurance bill is here. But what about that commercial deposit insurance for the commercial bank? What is it not? My understanding is that Honorable Johnson is saying, but it's not in the. When is it coming? Am I correct?
No, no, no.
Can I conclude on another point? My other point on 15, I think it is by Costasco. Your response on that specific area largely refers to responding lending, responsible lending. If I hear Costasco very well, their main area of interest is more about saving and not on lending. Here, as you remember,
which point are we talking to?
Page 4. Number 13.
Number 13, cooperative banks should be able to deduct from payroll. Is that the one you're talking to?
That's the only one.
Okay. So I just wanted to make sure. Okay.
The response from National Treasury talks about responsible risk management policies. And you further elaborated by emphasizing on responsible lending. If I hear Kusatu very well, they are more about saving. Instead of having to allow a voluntary service scenario, rather you might wish to say if that particular union is part of the scheme, therefore there'd be all of those deductions from companies. For me, these are two different things. If I hear very well, if you could just comment on that.
Okay, but also if you could clarify, because I thought I had you to be talking about deposit insurance, because Mr. Mashia wanted also you to...
It is true, Honorable Chair, to say that, the COSATU does talk about savings, and we are talking about risk management, and these two things are underlined. With that at stake, Honorable Chair, we shouldn't have. But the second part of the sponsor says that the difficulties around allowing the savings for the deposit taking then becomes, if you do, how then... The long-term insurance association, for instance, has constantly been in discussions with ourselves, but also with the accountant general, to say we should also allow for the payroll deduction for life insurances and so on. And in those instances, we've also consistently been saying no to that. So if we allow for this, then it means that we have to change entirely the policy stance in this regard. And just the difficulties around the administration of such becomes a huge problem on our side on the personal system on its own. Because once you open it up, then it implies an administrative responsibility on the part of the county general to administer that. So, so just on that basis, we still propose that we don't allow for personal, even for samples on deposit taking. And we apologize for making reference to responsible risk management. We take up the point that it should not have been. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Two of my potential questions have been covered, so I'll be very brief. One of them, I was unfortunately not here to hear the initial presentation about the FIAS, the fastening. Perhaps our presenters would be kind enough to tell me where it says
the School of
Economics. Yeah, I refer to page one, what
Yes. Should it not be FAIS?
FAIS, okay, fine, but all the same, cover both intermediate and
of course, if it's FAIS, we should pronounce it first instead of first.
Yeah, but it has to be FAIS. Okay, go ahead.
Could you please telling us how, what sort of exemptions you think would be appropriate if every other financial advisor has to comply? Why would the In what respect do you think it would be unnecessary for the cooperative banks to comply? And then just secondly, on page six, you've got question six. You're talking about the supervisory committee is going to be renamed governance committee and fulfill the governance oversight function. Now, in the bill we refer, I don't know whether I'm confusing more than one thing. In the bill we refer to the supervisor. Is the supervisor now going to be the governor? Or what?
Okay. Madam, I've got your name down. We'll ask it after Mr. Blood. Mr. Blood.
Thank you.
Mr. Singh first and then Mr. Blood.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Unfortunately, I haven't had the benefit of these documents until now, so maybe my question has been answered in previous hearings. But I just want to refer to the proposed tax dispensation that Treasury provided this document with. And while it's necessary to have a favorable tax regime, I think, for a developing agency, they say while the cooperative bank is still in the process of building towards meeting the prudential, it should be tax exempt. Now, is there going to be any particular time frame that can be put, or is it just going to be open-ended that a cooperative can continue, say, their building and then be testing them? So I just glanced through some of the other documents. For example, I see in Spain there was a 10-year ceiling. In the USA, it's an unlimited period. So just some comments from Treasury on that. And secondly, on the appointment of the board, here again, you know, it's a new agency. And maybe, you know, we should consider sector-specific representation in its evolution. And then later on, you know, see that the minister can appoint. And also the question of remuneration. I don't know if it's consistent with other legislation in Parliament where remuneration is decided by the institution itself rather than being a remuneration that's relevant to all organizations of some sort.
Thank you. Mine are just two simple ones. I just learned through the submission by Kosaki. I think there's one point, either there's a misunderstanding from my side or it has not been responded to. Because Kosaki was saying there are 15.7. The bill does not make provision for the conversion of private bank or any financial entity into a cooperative. And then they proceed, and this is a sentence that I'm also struggling to understand. They say this should be allowed, so should be allowed to facilitate speedy conversion of a private bank into a cooperative bank, especially in circumstances of private banks that are financially in trouble and which need quick responses. I find the sentence to be too confusing. But I'm not sure whether you have responded to this conversion of a private bank into a cooperative, because in your response here, you talk about conversion of a primary into a secondary. And in your, you are saying in your response there is a bit of misunderstanding on this concept. But I think the way they will put it across, it's about a private bank converting into a cooperative. The last one here is, which I agree fully with National Treasury. I have to replace my stuff. Yes. Where they say, in their response to, I think it's Sako, where they say that it's in relation to large exposure, where they say the supervisor can stop withdrawals that may threaten the stability of the bank. I agree fully with that. But I just want, for the purpose of certainty, to be assured where it's covered in the bill, whether 23B and subsection 2 and 3 would empower the supervisor to do as you have stated in your report, or it's just generally covered under the general powers of the supervisor.
The issue of large exposures, Mr. Bradley, you want to refer us to the page and the...
Referring to the page. The National Structural Reforms, I think it's page 7 of 27, section, I think it's point 10.
Okay.
Yeah, they say it's not necessary to protect the banks from large investors. It's the principle of 1%, one vote apply. I agree with that. In addition, the supervisor can stop withdrawals that may threaten the stability of the bank. I was saying that I agree fully with that, but I just want to be assured that it's covered in the bill, okay. So that tomorrow we can face an indication where people contest that the supervisor is encroaching in areas where it has not been legislated for.
Okay, and then Mr. Akil.
Chair, I must condense to that is the principle of precaution subsection. In a victim of one question.
What's your question?
I want to raise another point.
Okay.
Because I raise my hand, then you ask the department the question, you ask the department.
No, the other one was a follow-up. Now it's your question.
Okay. My question is related to Prataki's question. The issue of the supervisory committee as government committee. I don't have a problem, but in terms of consistency, if you can assist me, the support was me, submission six and the 19. Are you saying the same thing or what is it? Then it means that we have to clarify between days and so on. Can you assist?
Okay, let's deal with those questions.
Thanks, Honourable Member. Can we start with the question on the compliance with 5? Can I ask your end to take that?
If I do. Thank you, Chief. I think it's important to note that the specifics in respect of how compliance happens with fines is specified in the regulation, which is the legislative authority that Parliament reported to the Minister. So once the Act is promulgated, we've already indicated that we will request the Minister to listen in Schedule 1, and subsequent to that, we will be promulgate regulations, or Minister will also promulgate regulations that will determine the details that we alluded to earlier.
The second question relates to the supervisory board committee and the governance board committee. It is true, honourable members, we do accept that in the bill, what we did not do clearly, or what seems to be confusing, is that first of all you tell us that there's going to be a supervisor who does prudential regulation, and then later on you tell us about a board committee that does supervisory work. What does that mean? And we accept that that's the confusion, because these two are not necessarily related. Now, the supervisor committee, as is envisaged, is going to be a board committee whose function is to oversee that the board performs its functions as requested by the constitution of the bank, by the Cooperative Act, and by the bill. Now, that supervisor committee must have members who are not members of the board. They must be independent of the board. Now, so instead of calling it supervisor, which is confusing because we talk about the supervisor of that prudential regulation, we suggest that we change the name from supervisor committee to governance committee. Now, governance committee, we believe that it's a much more descriptive name that says exactly what the function is going to do. Something else we're proposing to do is that in that section where we talk about the supervisory committee, which now suggests we call government, we must actually spell out what the functions are. And in spelling out these functions, we will include the fact that it will ensure, sort of become
an oversight body that ensures that the board meets when it's supposed to meet. There are elections every year, as there should be. That they do supply, they do ensure that there are internal control systems as they should be. Current practice at the moment is that because there's no regulator, the boards that you find in the cooperative bank have been there forever, for as long as that there was never any supervisory institution. So that means that there's absolutely just no governance whatsoever there. I think in relation to that, there was a comment that also came from COSAC that said, but then maybe merge the audit committee and the supervisory committee, and then we say no, these perform separate functions, and we don't think that they should be merged. Can I ask Ola to take the question on the time frame for the tax regime?
Thank you, Chair. The question on the time frame, and firstly the agency will have a very important role in terms of developing these village banks in terms of support, training, and building them to be sustainable institutions. Now the time frame, this is something that we'll have to discuss with the revenue service. But for example, if a village bank within a year, they already meet their